The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app. Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finn, and we've got an awesome show for you today. In this half hour of the show, we're going to be doing a best-of rebroadcast of renowned rabbi, author, lecturer, Rabbi Shlomo Riskin, wrote a book about modern orthodoxy. We're going to talk about that this half hour of the show. The portion of the week is the portion of Chaya Sorah. It's to be found in the book of Genesis, chapter 23 and following. We've got a wonderful assortment of Jewish music. You want to stay tuned through all of that. We'll be closing with, of course, a really dynamic Hasidic story. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. Close to 800 terrorist attacks occurred in Israel since Rosh Hashanah in mid-September. 11 people were killed in those attacks, and close to 100 were wounded. Israel rejected a New Zealand proposal to the UN Security Council to jumpstart the two-state solution. Israel would need to freeze settlements in the West Bank, while the PA would have to drop all international suits against Israel in The Hague. Yeah, that sounds like a quid pro quo there. Israel experienced severe thunderstorms all this week. Many areas, especially north of Tel Aviv, remain without power after heavy flooding. One person died in a hailstorm. A record 8.6 inches of rain fell in October in Israel. Normal rainfall is 1.3 inches for the month. Class action lawsuit against Facebook was filed in New York Superior Court by Shurat Hadin on behalf of over 20,000 Israelis. The suit demands that Facebook remove any insightful materials and create a better logarithm for monitoring terrorist posts. Probably be a good idea anyway. Finally, we get some news in the sport. Kuwait refused an entry visa to the Israeli shooting team for a qualifying match of Olympic shooting. In response, the International Olympic Committee declared the meet is no longer an Olympic qualifier. Take that, Kuwait. And finally, NASA and the Israeli Space Agency signed an agreement to expand cooperation in civil space activities. I don't know why we're reporting this, because anything they're going to do has already been classified as secret, so I can't even tell you what they're going to be doing. But that's the news that we have. I can only report it as they tell it to me. In related news, the United Nations Committee on the Peaceful Uses of Outer Space. I didn't even know that there was a United Nations Committee on the Peaceful Uses of Outer Space, actually established in 1959, and they call themselves by their acrostic, Copious Committee on the Peaceful Uses of Outer Space. Copious. Anyway, so the United Nations Committee on the Peaceful Uses of Outer Space voted to accept Israel as a full member, citing Israel's advanced technology. Now, we should be jumping up and down and saying yay, but Syria is also part of that group. And, like, what kind of space program do they have? Anyway, that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Spex Howard School of Broadcast Arts, this is where you start.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. We have someone who I've wanted to have on the show for quite a long time, and Baruch Hashem, we now have an excuse for having him on. No excuse necessary, but we have online Rabbi Shlomo Riskin, who is the chief rabbi of Efrat Israel. He's also the founder of the Lincoln Square Synagogue, a rabbinic icon, if there is such a thing. He's written a book called The Living Tree, Studies in Modern Orthodoxy. Welcome to the Jewish Hour, Rabbi Riskin.
It's a pleasure to be here, Rabbi Finman. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. What do you say about seventh children turning into werewolves?
It sounds to me like some kind of old wives' story.
Yeah, this one goes beyond. It's like when I thought it was just like an amalgam of like too many cultures coming all together at one time. You know, it's just like hello, but they made it into a menorah lighting ceremony in the president's office. So I suppose it's a good thing. Anyway, so
I hope so.
Yeah, studies in modern orthodoxy. I'm interested and intrigued with the term modern orthodoxy. Where did that term come from?
I'm not quite certain myself. I think around the world of Yeshiva University, probably, which is the Beit Midrash from which I emerged. What it fundamentally says is, in a world in which there are many Orthodox people who believe in separation from the world and separation from worldly culture and worldly knowledge, it's important to state that there is a very clear brand of Orthodoxy which has total fealty to halakha, to Jewish law, but at the same time believes that we must live in a modern world.
Mm-hmm. Would you say the term's about 100 years old?
I think less. I would say about 50 years old.
50 years old. So those who coined the term modern orthodox would still be considered modern. It's not antique modern orthodoxy. It's okay.
Right.
So if it is that those who would refer to themselves, I'm not a label person generally. I think labels get in the way. But those who would define themselves as modern orthodox, they adhere to the halacha, and we can talk about this thing called the parameter that we say Jewish law is not Catholic, meaning the verb the adjective Catholic, meaning absolute. There's no one way in Judaism. When Jewish law was developed, there was a whole parameter. So if it is that modern orthodoxy falls within the parameter, so why call it modern orthodox? Why just call it orthodox or not call it anything?
First of all, one of the articles in the book is Descent in Jewish Tradition, The Glory of Halachic Pluralism. So I very much agree with you that it's not just one way, and there are several ways. There are legitimate paths to God.
Okay, let's stop right there. Moses comes down the mountain. And we believe in oral tradition. He has this oral tradition and says, this is the way we're supposed to do things. When it says, remember the Sabbath to keep it holy, he gives them this whole lecture, which takes up probably a long time. And that's the way they did it. How is it then that from Moses till now or 50 years ago, we can have a variance of accepted opinion? Such that one would say, you can't do that, and the other one says, oh, yes, I can, and still be valid.
Well, that's the nature of Torah Sheba'al Peh, the oral law.
Please explain.
We don't only have a written law, we have an oral law. And the oral law, certainly, much of it was given by God at Sinai, but there's also much of it that was left for the rabbis of each generation. In fact, in one of the most amazing passages within the Gemara, in Bava Metzia 59 and Tet, the story of Tanur Shel Achnai, a special kind of oven, whether it was ritually pure or ritually impure, there are two views, and the rabbis argue against Rabbi Eliezer. The majority of the rabbis argue against Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Eliezer says, if I am correct, let a voice from heaven say so. And a voice came down from God saying, what do you want for my son, Rabbi Eliezer? The law is in accordance with his opinion. And nevertheless, the rabbis decided you go by majority rule and went by majority rule. And it's fascinating that there was one of the rabbis who used to be visited by Elijah the prophet. And that rabbi was asked, what was God doing at that time? Elijah the prophet is one of our folk figures who travels from heaven to earth regularly. He was translated into heaven rather than having died in the theological terminology which is usually used. And he said that God said, my children have conquered me, my children have conquered me, as he smiled. And the word for conquered in the Talmud is nitzchuni, which can also come from the Hebrew word netzach, to make eternal. My children have eternalized me. Because what it means is that within that oral law, God left certain things open for the rabbis of every generation to decide because of different conditions, because of different needs, and because of a different zeitgeist from one generation to another. And therefore, in the words of the Talmud, again, Eruvin 13, about Hillel and Shammai, Eilu ve'eilu divrei Elokim chayim, these and those are the words of the living God. God left it open enough for the acceptance of different interpretations.
Okay, let me, that wasn't actually your second way into my next question. This idea of Eilu ve'eilu divrei Elokim chayim, both opinions, you have one opinion saying yes and one opinion saying no, and both are valid opinions. You have, for example, this oven, which involved Rabbi Eliezer and the sages. Rabbi Eliezer said one thing, the sages say another thing, and neither one of them is wrong. Could you explain that to somebody who is not familiar with Talmudic thought, how that is possible?
Yes. As a matter of fact, there's a very interesting book which recently came out. The opposable mind. I'll try to see if I can put my hands on it to tell you the author. The law of the excluded middle is what Aristotle said meant that if one person says A and the other person says B, if A is right, B is wrong. If B is right, A is wrong. But that's not the Talmudic mind. A and B can be right for different people and for different
circumstances,
conditions.
Yeah.
I mean, I can give you loads of examples. There are clear laws in terms of kashrut, keeping kosher. There are certain kinds of dishes that cannot be made kosher. Porcelain, for example. Glazed porcelain, glazed china, there are different ideas. So there are rabbis who say that glazed china cannot be made kosher, and there are rabbis that say that glazed china can be made kosher. So let me tell you, I went to my teacher, to Rabbi Soloveitchik, with this question. I had a student before I was a rabbi in one of the seminars of Yeshiva University. And she was a very religious young woman. She was a high school child, actually. Her parents were not religious at all for generations. But she became quite observant. And her parents were willing. It was an interesting case, you know. Usually there were people when I was growing up that kept kosher homes inside for their own older parents or relatives. But outside, they would eat non-kosher food. And the joke used to be at least the dishes would go to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
But there were, this young woman only ate kosher outside of the house, but in the house she couldn't tell her mother she was not going to eat her food. So her mother said that she would kosherize the house if she could keep this very good glazed china and not get rid of it. I went to my teacher, to Rabbi Soloveitchik, who was probably the greatest Talmudic authority in the last generation. And I asked him the question. And he said, look, you can go for a case like this where it's necessary. It's quite all right for that home to become kosherized and to go according to those who say that glazed china can be made kosher and need not be thrown away. And even I left him, I thanked him for the response, and he called me back and he said to me, this seems like a young woman who is very serious. And as soon as the house is kosherized and you have to check that it's done properly, then you have to also eat a meal in that house, even on the glazed china.
Mm-hmm.
Because she has to really believe that it's okay. In other words, within the religious dynamic, there is room for differing opinions, for differing situations, and different people. And everything is not that monolithic. That's what I call halachic pluralism.
Okay, understood. Okay, if you're just tuning in, our guest today is Rabbi Shlomo Riskin. He's the chief rabbi of Efrat Israel, written a book called The Living Tree, Studies in Modern Orthodoxy. Would you say that this is a manifesto for modern Orthodoxy, and this is what modern Orthodoxy is, Rabbi Riskin?
No, I don't think so. First of all, I'm not the person who can define it. I just want to respond a little bit to what you said before. I don't think there's anything wrong with labels, because I think labels explains a little bit about which school of thought you belong to. Look, I live in Israel. In Israel, the kind of kippah you wear is an automatic label. If you wear a black silk kippah, then you are an extreme right wing. Black velvet kippah, you are an extreme right wing. Ultra-Orthodox, as they are called. If you wear a knitted skull cap, then you're a religious Zionist, and perhaps modern Orthodox. And there's a difference. There's a difference between those religious Jews who accept the Zionist notion of Israel as a state and those religious Jews who do not accept the Zionist ideal and everything that's involved therein. So I think it's important, and that's true about secular studies as well. There are those who welcome universal studies, university studies. I even have an article, one of my articles is Science and Philosophy Within the House of Study.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's one statement in the Talmud that says that anyone who has the ability to understand science and doesn't study it, he doesn't see the handiwork of God. And Maimonides even puts science and philosophy under the rubric of Gemara, which is part of the Talmud. So that I think, and of course there are other religious Jews, Orthodox Jews, who believe that university is forbidden, and the study of philosophy is forbidden. So a label can sometimes clarify to which school of thought you belong within commitment to halacha, to praying three times a day, to keeping the Sabbath completely, crying as hard as you can, to make certain that you don't transgress any of the infractions, and nevertheless have a philosophical outlook, which is a different one.
Okay. Understood. Now, let me ask you a question. There is a perception that people who adherence to what is referred to as the school of modern orthodoxy look for leniencies. If you're going to talk about this parameter of a correctness within Jewish law, the person who's involved with modern orthodoxy is seen as being more towards the left, more towards the lenient side. Is that a correct assumption?
I begin the book with an article, introduction, What is Modern Orthodoxy? And I write, perhaps the best way to begin this essay is by explaining what modern orthodoxy is not. And I say it is not Jewish law light. It is not orthodoxy light. In fact, I would say that an individual who is more Haredi, more ultra-Orthodox, who is a Satmar Hasid, for example, who lives in Williamsburg, from where I grew up, or Mea Shearim in Israel, and has the clothes and all of the signposts of being ultra-Orthodox, I think perhaps for him, it is not absolutely crucial that he pray in the synagogue three times a day. He can pray at home. But for someone who spends his days in a science lab or in a law court and is very much modern Orthodox and deals with the outside world and spends a great deal of time in the outside world, I think for him, praying in the synagogue three times a day and having an anchor is critically, critically necessary. So in certain ways, in certain manners, I think that modern Orthodox Jews have to be even more careful about keeping every jot and tittle of the law.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. I actually saw that. I had occasion to be in New Rochelle, New York, which is suburban New York, and it's like two or three stops north of the Bronx on the Metro North line. And I was there for a Tuesday morning. I happened to be there, and there were 300 people there for morning prayers, which is something I had in the young Israel of New Rochelle, something which I had never seen in pretty much any synagogue. That there should be such an adherence to want to get to the minyan was at 6:30 in the morning and people were out the door by 7:15, so they could catch the 7:32 to New York, but they were there. So there is a let's talk maybe some theoretical stuff, Rabbi Riskin. Whether it's debatable or not, the conservative movement is imploding. Since I came to Detroit, which Detroit was very much a stronghold of the conservative movement 27 years ago, there were close to 20 conservative synagogues in the greater Metro Detroit area. Now in the whole state of Michigan, I think there are 6 conservative through mergers and places just closing up. And it seems that there was a divide with the membership. The people who were like less involved with ritual and whatnot, wound up aligning themselves with the reform movement. And I can see something developing in the future called the progressive movement, which is an amalgam of the two. But the ones who are more involved with ritual and the conservative movement are now finding themselves in what they're called modern Orthodox. Let's talk about this natural progression from, say, conservative to modern Orthodox, and is there what kind of line is there between the conservative movement and modern Orthodoxy?
Well, I believe that I know about this pretty well because my synagogue in Lincoln Center, I was there for 19 years, actually, before I made Aliyah 30 years ago, began as a nominally conservative synagogue. And as a matter of fact, someone even wrote a master's degree trying to argue that the switch that took place in our synagogue from conservative to modern orthodoxy signaled the general rise of modern orthodoxy within American Jewry and the decline of conservatism within the Jewish community. Be that as it may, I think the difference has to be very clear. What plagued the conservative movement almost from its beginning was that there was no clear statement of lines of commitment.
Explain.
The leadership of the movement, especially within the Jewish Theological Seminary, certainly the people in the Talmud department, were very scrupulous about religious observance. But it wasn't true of the rank and file. And there was never a very clear commitment to halacha, to the Shulchan Aruch.
You're talking about even way back in 1906 when you're talking about the founders of there, Marcus Jastrow and what's his name? Come on, my brain is drawing. He later started the Reconstruction. Mordechai Kaplan and those people.
Mordechai Kaplan was not a conservative. He had no lines at all. He was a Reconstructionist. He was a theologian. He was a philosopher. I was friendly with him because he had a grandson who became an Orthodox Jew under the influence of Lincoln Square Synagogue. And he called me and he invited me for coffee, and I thought he would be angry at me, but much the opposite. He said, I know now that there will be continuity. He himself was fundamentally an observant Jew, even though he didn't believe in a halachic structure. But he certainly was not a conservative Jew. But he was the other extreme.
Okay, the founders, per se, back in
the day. So I'm talking about the founders. They called it, in the really beginning, they called it the positive historical school. They were against Wellhausen and many of the other biblical critics and Jewish thinkers who debunked the classical Jewish texts. And they didn't do that. That was their major thing. They wanted to conserve the sacred quality of the texts, but they didn't make clear statements about the Torah being God-given, and they didn't make clear statements about the importance of fealty to halacha.
Okay. And so how then does that lead then to these people who are more ritual fitting into like the modern Orthodox synagogues?
Well, you know, they would fit very well. I mean,
there's what's happening, yes.
We also had in Lincoln Square a number of wonderful families who came from the conservative movement into the Orthodox movement.
Okay. You put in the book, there's a chapter about Aguna, which is a woman whose husband refuses to divorce her, and she's stuck, basically, according to Jewish law. And this is after you even introduced the chapter that you wrote a whole book about it. So tell me the importance of why this subject of trying to find ways for women to be able to remarry was included in the Living Tree when you already wrote a book about that subject specifically.
That's a good question. And I debated a little bit about having that chapter in it. But because I believe the Aguna problem is one of the greatest questions of our times and one of the big blotches on our great discussion of halacha. To put it as carefully, as clearly as I can put it, there are many solutions to the Aguna issue within the Talmud, within the responsa, within Jewish law. Unfortunately, the Orthodox judges today are very reluctant to act on these. And I believe very strongly there are great authorities, even like Rabbi Shlomo Edels, the Mashah, and people who are extremely respected, who cried out about the importance of making, just taking things that are within the Talmud and utilizing them. If a husband takes unfair advantage of Jewish law, then the marriage formula, this is great, great authorities and decisors like Rashi and the Ritva, that's what I will say now, says that built into the marital formula, behold, thou art betrothed unto me with this ring in accordance with the laws of Moses and of Israel. When the husband says to the wife, in accordance with the laws of Moses and of Israel, basically it means that the Jewish leaders of each generation are partners with the husband in establishing the marriage, and therefore have the right to abrogate a marriage if the husband takes unfair advantage of Jewish law and does not give his wife a writ of divorcement. Mm-hmm. And there are five instances in the Talmud where there is a cancellation of the marriages, an abrogation. So I feel very strongly that we must find a solution. I feel very strongly that Jewish law is being maligned, and it need not be. The Talmud had the solution.
Mm-hmm. So that book, let me show you, that book.
It's a popular movie now, which is frightening to see.
Mm-hmm. That book was written, I believe, in 2008. So proposals are being made all the time. We did a whole show about Aguna. In fact, we've done several shows about Aguna, these women who cannot remarry, who are stuck in marriages. But it seems that we're always coming back to the same place. We're like the hamster in the wheel. It's like we're running, and we're not getting any place. So you live in Israel. You're involved. You're part of the rabbinate there. Are there inroads being made in this problem?
I think there are beginnings being made, and I think there will be more.
Okay. That's a good thing to hear. That's a good note to end off on, because we're running out of time. We have run out of time. We're over time on this. This has been fascinating. Our guest today was Rabbi Shlomo Riskin. He is the chief rabbi of Efrat. He wrote a book called The Living Tree, Studies in Modern Orthodox. It is from Magid Press, available wherever fine Jewish books are sold, and online, I'm sure, in zillions of places. And thank you so much, Rabbi Riskin, for taking out some of your time and coming and talking with us.
A pleasure to speak to you. All the best.
Okay.
Shalom, shalom.
Take care. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we will be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
The Art Studio of Oak Park is now accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, the Art Studio of Oak Park has something for you. All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes. Flexible hours available. The Art Studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The Art Studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
Some things are better the way they used to be, like the crisp feel of a cool autumn day, the serenity of a baby sleeping, or the feeling of coming home after a long trip. Franklin Cider Mills makes cider the way cider is supposed to be. Its old-fashioned, clear, crisp taste reminds you of a cool autumn day. Located in the heart of historic Franklin Village at 14 Mile and Franklin Road, Franklin Cider Mill has been making cider the same way for over a century. Always fresh, with no additives or preservatives. You just can't buy Franklin Cider in any supermarket. Franklin Cider Mill is open from Labor Day weekend to after Thanksgiving from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Come visit Franklin Cider Mill. It's kind of like coming home.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to The Jewish Hour. It's time for music. We have coming up for your listening pleasure. This is Mordechai Ben David. Wrote a song in response to what's going on in Israel. It's called Avinu Malkeinu Hoshienu, which means Our Father, Our King, Save Us.
Avinu Malkeinu Hoyaseh Lemanecho V'yoshienu Avinu Malkeinu Hoyaseh Lemanecho Malekeinu avinu malkeinu asei lemancho moshi.
Want assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. This is like, I really hit pay dirt when I went looking for this song. This is the Shiril Klezmer Band. So it's obviously then a klezmer song. It's an American klezmer band, so it's got like a lot of American fusion type stuff in it. Not too much. It's not weird. And we're going to listen to the Polka Dot Blues.
Do you or someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS drug detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox. Herschel Fimmen here. You're listening to the Jewish Show. We got time for one more. This last Wednesday was the 21st anniversary of the passing of Rabbi Shlomo Carlebach, who, as far as Jewish music is concerned, wrote like probably more than anybody except for maybe the Magister Chassidim. But we're not going to go into that right now. But instead, we're going to listen to Shlomo Carlebach doing one of his renditions of Lecha Dodi from the Friday Night Liturgy.
Oh,
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. This week is a portion of Chaya Sorah. It's to be found in Genesis 23 and further. The first part of it, most of it deals with getting Yitzchak engaged to Rebekah. The first part deals with the death, burial, acquisition of plot and burial of Sarah. There's an exchange between Abraham and the Hittites who owned the property that Abraham wanted. Abraham made them an offer. He said, listen, I want to buy the cave. I want to be a nice guy. But if you refuse to sell me the cave, guess what? God gave it to me. I own it anyway. I will just have to conquer you and then take the cave by force. He let it be known that he was not going to take anything from these people. It's interesting that last week the UN voted that that cave where Sarah is born, buried, is a Muslim holy site. Yes, so the Arabs, the Muslims don't have any claim to Sarah at all? Hello? Or Isaac or Jacob? Maybe they could say Abraham, okay, because, you know, the slave boy Ishmael. But no, they don't have any claim to it. But they've laid claim to it. So what do the Jews have to respond? Listen, we paid for it. And if you're not going to acquiesce, we'll just have to conquer it. Now, that's all very good for out there. How does that affect us? We have our own battles going on inside of us. We have our own Hittites, you might say, that are trying to take away our holy land, which is us, our persona, and make it into a Hittite land. We have to be firm and say, no, I am not going to allow myself to act like a Hittite to some barbaric, idolatrous, hedonistic, pursuing individual. But rather, my goal is I'm going to turn my persona into the Holy Land. We got to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. Don't go away. You're listening to the Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Spex Howard from the Spex Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor the Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for the Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to the Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Hey, Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? Go to rabbifinman.com, rabbifinman.com. And you can contact me right there on the homepage as a contact us link. We also have archived editions of the show. We have archived classes, the e-parsha, and of course, the very important donations page. It is November. Thank God last week we paid for September. But it's November. Now we're working towards October. We need your help. You've come through every month. We have to do this month by month by month by month. You know, I would save all of you many minutes of having to listen to me ask for you to go to the computer. You know how you should do it. It's like the right thing to do. And help support the show. We're going on to 20 years now.
And every month we have to come and we have to say, please help us. So go to the computer, go to rabbifinman.com, click on the donations page, make a donation for anything you want. If you have a PayPal account of your own, it's real easy. It takes 30 seconds to do the whole thing. And if you're doing it by credit card, it's 3 minutes. Don't like using credit cards over internet? Understood. Send your donation of any amount to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. And we appreciate it. The Almighty appreciates it. You'll appreciate it. All the people listening will appreciate it, and the world will be a better place. This coming week is the anniversary of the passing of the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe. His name was Avshalom Baer. He's known as the Rashab. He passed away in 1920, so this would be the 95th anniversary of his passing. He was a very deep fellow. They refer to him as the Maimonides of the 19th century, which that shows you the depth of scope. He was a very deep thinker. There's a story that he wasn't very well and spent a lot of time traveling to doctors in various places. I believe that he was in Vienna with his then 10-year-old son, who later succeeded him as the sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe. And they were walking down the street, and they were having some sort of conversation about something. And the kid, he passed by a tree, and he ripped a leaf off, kind of played with the leaf a little bit, and then threw the leaf away. You know, no big deal, not thinking. The father became very pensive and started just thinking. And then after about 10 minutes of walking, he was like totally, completely lost in thought, totally. Such that this 10-year-old writes, it says, I was getting kind of embarrassed walking in the street with my father, who was like lost in thought. After a period of time, the father said to the son, do you know what the Almighty had to do to create that leaf? The process that was involved, whereby the infiniteness of Hashem was contained in that leaf, and you just wantonly just stop the whole process. And he looked at him and said, you have to be more thoughtful. Now we have this word now in the 21st century. You have to be more mindful of your actions. If it's just a leaf, you can imagine now things that are really important. So that's going to do it for us today. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope we had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you had a chance to make your day a little bit better. We hope you have a great week. And we hope to see you again back next week. Take care. Lechadon.